Imagine the scene. Germany in 1927. Hitler is head of the Nazi movement, but not yet in power. 26-year-old James Luther Adams is visiting Nuremberg just in time for the annual Nazi festival. The great parade attracts huge crowds in the streets. Jostling in the crowd and watching the thousands of singing Nazis with their many brass bands, he gets into a conversation with people who turn out to be Nazi sympathizers. Now, Adams is more curious than smart, so he asks about the meaning of the swastikas that are everywhere. Quickly, he finds himself in a heated conversation. More and more people join in. Adams asks more and more insistent questions. Suddenly, someone seizes him by the elbow from behind and pulls him vehemently out of the crowd. No one helps him. At first, Adams thinks he is being taken into custody. He cannot see who it is. Adams is marched down a side street and then up an alley. At the dead end of the alley, the young German working man in his 30s wheels him around and shouts, "Don't you know that when you watch a parade in Germany today, you either keep your mouth shut or get your head bashed in?" Then his captor smiles and says, "Don't be frightened. I've saved you." "Saved me from what?" "From being sandbagged." 5 minutes more of that argument and they would have knocked you out, flat on the pavement. The speaker is an unemployed worker and an anti-Nazi. He invites Adams to have dinner with him at his home, and Adams gladly accepts. A few years later, in the mid-30s, Adams is back in Germany studying theology and philosophy. The Gestapo stops him this time, charges him for walking on the street with a deposed Jewish teacher and for visiting a synagogue. He is interrogated, but let go. One of his instructors there challenges him to the significance of his liberal religion. He accuses, "What commitment is necessary?" When Adams presses for more details, the instructor asks him, "If fascism should arise in the States, what in your past performance would constitute a pattern or framework of resistance? What have you done to support your democracy?" Adams has no answer. He does not understand citizenship participation. But he watches. At the persecuted confessional seminary that he attends, meetings are forbidden. Repeatedly, he hears anti-Nazis say, "If only 1,000 of us had, in the late 20s, had combined in heroic resistance, we could have stopped Hitler." He notices the ongoing, stubborn resistance of the Jehovah's Witnesses. He observes that there are few non-conforming churches in Germany. Gradually, James Luther Adams comes to the conviction that voluntary associations are essential to a viable democratic society. He realizes that active participation as a citizen is the commitment of a liberal religionist. It is helpful to understand and to know something about James Luther Adams' background. He was born in rural eastern Washington State in 1901, a PK. A preacher's kid. His father was a severe and authoritarian minister who believed that the second coming of Christ was just around the corner. So talking about worldly issues was irrelevant. Adams understood the need to worship together at an early age, but it was his time in Germany that showed him the value of those many groups working separately are on their own facet of the societal whole. Adams calls this a conversion experience. It changed the way he lived his life, and it focused his academic thought. After that realization, James Luther Adams got busy with race relations, civil liberties, housing problems. He helped found the Independent Voters of Illinois, a nonpartisan precinct organization. He traveled to Washington, D.C. to consult about Chicago politics. Adams became known for the number and variety of causes he worked with over the whole span of his life. He admitted, "There is nothing intrinsically unusual about any of this. It is only unusual for the Protestant clergyman." Then he developed a practical theology of voluntary associational activity, a body of thought articulating why his particular revelation should hold true for all religious liberals. He became one of the most influential Christian and Unitarian ethicists of the 20th century. James Luther Adams highlights three major elements in his pragmatic theory of religious beliefs. First, behavior. Second, feeling, a feeling that prompts, accompanies, or perhaps stands in tension to your behavior. And a belief, the meaning of which is revealed in the behavior and the feeling linked to it. Adams argues that to understand the meaning of your belief, you have to observe how you act and how you feel about it. It is not only a cognitive activity. Moreover, and this is where he came out with something new, the way in which your belief is expressed in an institution, a social, political, or economic institution that you either want to change or have it not change, is the important part. Behavior for Adams extends from the personal to the institutional. What we do here at Beacon and how we do it demonstrates our beliefs. We are democratically governed. Think about the guidelines for meetings that we developed years ago. They state how we are to relate to each other in the formal setting of a meeting. And think about the guidelines for conflict management we put together about 5 years ago. And the food bank we support both by donating food and by helping run the distribution depot. And from what I hear about it, you run it like you're not in a patronizing way, but in a egalitarian kind of way. Extending the behavior from the personal to the institutional setting was the novel part of James Luther Adams' theology. Adams says that religious belief is the connection between our interior lives and public action. Belief is the connection between the psychological and the institutional spheres we inhabit. There can be tension between our inner and outer lives, our personal life and our public life. We need and want privacy as much as we need and want to take action in the world. We know there must be order and the rule of law, even as we bump up against that order with our sense of personal freedom. What I want to do, I want to go faster than the speed limit. There's no way to resolve all these tensions. We live with them. Harvard professor of theology Harvey Cox recalls the observation of Alexis de Tocqueville in the early 19th century that American religion had provided the fertile soil for democracy. Without the many and differing congregations and other voluntary associations he found in America, Tocqueville wrote, there would not have been the habits of the heart that democracy requires. In the congregations he visited, people learn to discuss issues, make decisions as a whole, and compromise where necessary. They learn to link moral principles to current issues, and finally to accept the results that these procedural strategies produced. What they learned in church, they applied to the public arena. In short, the free churches of America built networks of responsibility, trust, and the concept of the common good. That song we sang, we are called to use all life as a gift to build the common good. Cox goes on to give a current example from Latin America. Especially in Brazil, Pentecostal and evangelical churches are becoming popular. A sociologist conducting research about their peasant leagues made a startling discovery. These groups had organized to buy seed and equipment and to market their products cooperatively. At the time of the research, 25 years ago, the evangelicals and Pentecostals numbered only 10% of the total population. But in the peasant leagues, they were the leaders and they did most of the work. This was a puzzle to her, until she, a practicing Catholic, came to understand their church context. These church folk kept lists of people. Who was interested? Who wasn't home when they knocked on the door? Who let them in and who didn't? They knew how to convey their message clearly and concisely if the door was open to them. In brief, they had learned how to organize. JLA, as he was often called, believed that voluntary associations were the seedbed and lifeblood of any genuine democracy. They mediate between and among the larger structures of economy, government, education, and press. They provide alternative patterns of organization and unofficial networks. They school people in the indispensable skills needed to make democracy work. I have heard these stories right here at Beacon of people learning to speak up, to speak out, to organize here at Beacon, and then take that experience and expertise out to a wider world. When we let our children see that we are working to make the world a better place, that we are a drop in the bucket even, when we help them help others, they know that we can make a difference, and they begin to understand the way our democracy works. Yes, we are teaching them about individual compassion for others, but we are also showing them, the best teaching tool ever, how to participate in society. Over the past few weeks, we have watched populist uprisings in the Middle East and Northern Africa force dictators out of power. We have seen nascent democratic governments starting up elsewhere. I wonder about the strength of their citizen associations. How many do they have? How much do the citizens know about working together in this way? Democracy is so much more than just voting. And we hear so little of these other details. Time will have to tell. Forming organizations with a specific object in mind, whether that be feeding the hungry or fundraising for cancer research, is a process of building relationships. These relationships through the organization make things happen, and they make meaning for us as individuals. Again, we come to that conclusion. Meaning in life comes from the relationships we form. More relationships leads to more happiness, according to some people. And that leads us back to the universalist definition of God. God is love, that universalist Hosea Ballou preached in the late 1700s. The voluntary associations we support are the way we live that out. The way we as Unitarians make love or God, use the word that fits for you, real. Look at the effort we put into the food bank. There are many other organizations that we work with to make the world a better place. Think of the organizations we support through sharing the plate offerings. This year it has been the Elizabeth Fry Society. We have also supported the Pocomo Youth Society. And I know at least one of us has been on their board since then. And we've donated funds to the Hope for Freedom Society too. We're looking for next year's recipient. Who do you think we should help? Which organization will be our hands, our hearts next year? Ivy Hubbard would like to know what your nomination is. Adams believed that choosing to engage in free cooperative effort for the common good does not come out of thin air. It comes from the conviction that we can indeed make things better, that there is a vision of a better life right here on earth. Our activity in democratic citizenship is evidence that we have a transcending vision of what could be possible. The way our institutions are organized, Adams says, reflects our beliefs. James Luther Adams was a professor of theology for 40 years in University of Chicago, Harvard University, Meadville Lombard Seminary, and was recognized as one of the preeminent Christian social ethicists and theologians of the 20th century. It is his articulation of the role of voluntary associations in society that we in the congregation remember most, especially this one society we know so well together, Beacon Unitarian Church. Amen.